WestJet issues lockout notice to union. Canada Post Corporation announces annual losses just as it heads into bargaining. India responds to Canada's arrests over assassination of Sikh activist. Conservative Party in Britain suffers losses in local elections. Israel shuts down Al Jazeera offices, and 12 people killed in bomb in displacement camps in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Good morning. It's Monday, May 6th. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. We start this morning at WestJet. The company has issued a lockout notice to the union that represents mechanics that work at the airline. The notice came 72 hours before the lockout is set to start on Tuesday at noon Mountain Time. It comes after the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association, the union that represents the mechanics, announced members would take part in a strike vote on May 2nd. The union's sticking points were around benefits, pay, and what it called quality of life issues. WestJet and the union have been negotiating a new contract since September 2023, and they must be thinking that people are not paying attention to the vital role that airline mechanics play in keeping us safe. Next, Canada Post's management is warning that they are losing too much money for the corporation to remain sustainable. The company says that they've lost $3 billion in the past 6 years, and last year they lost $748 million. The corporation has seen letter mail decline for years, but have had an increase in parcel deliveries. The article from CBC explains that they just can't compete with delivery companies that profit off of, quote, low-cost labor, unquote. And some 200,000 new addresses are added each year in Canada, which increases the strain on Canada Post to deliver mail and parcels. Now, the article does mention that there is a round of collective bargaining on right now, suggesting to me at least that this is management's way of trying to get the public on side with paying Canada Post workers less. The union, CUPW, didn't respond to a request for comment. The article doesn't consider that maybe the problem is that low-cost delivery services need to be forced to pay their workers more. A national public postal service should be run to break even or even subsidized by government. But if Canada Post is driving up wages in the industry, the corporation should be proud of that and not talk about the loss in profits as if it's spelling the end of the corporation. Next, three Indian citizens were arrested last week in Edmonton over the killing of Sikh activist Hardeep Singh Nijjar. His killing resulted in heightened diplomatic tensions between India and Canada. Now, India is responding to these latest arrests, calling them and the investigation into their government's possible involvement in the assassination a, quote, political compulsion, unquote. The three Indian nationals were arrested on first-degree murder and conspiracy charges. The RCMP says that they are aware that others might have been involved in the killing as well. As a reminder, Nijjar had been wanted by the Indian authorities for allegations of terrorism and conspiracy to commit murder, but was more likely wanted because of his involvement with a Sikh independence movement calling for a separate state called Khalistan. Turning now to England, where the ruling Conservative Party has lost several seats in local elections. While these elections deal primarily with issues on local and community levels, they often can signal public opinion leading up to a general election. And if that's the case, it's not looking good for the Conservatives, who've been in power for 14 years, after winning their third general election in a row in 2019. These local elections signal that they are likely to lose in the upcoming general election. The party has lost 473 seats, while the Labour Party has picked up 185 seats and saw their mayoral candidate in London, Sadiq Khan, win a third term. Labour is also ahead in public opinion polls, staying in the double digits. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak acknowledged the results, calling them, quote-unquote, disappointing. Turning now to Israel, where the government has made good on a threat to shut down Al Jazeera. You'll recall that early last month, the Knesset had passed a law that would allow the government to shut down foreign networks that it deemed to be a security threat, with Benjamin Netanyahu saying at the time that he would act immediately to stop Al Jazeera specifically. Well, on Saturday, authorities stormed Al Jazeera's operations, shutting down the network's operations in the West Bank and in Israel. The order to shut down the network made no mention of Al Jazeera's operations in Gaza. The Israeli government and Netanyahu specifically have been accusing Al Jazeera of incitement since October 7th and said that the station posed a security threat. But the tensions between the government and the network go much further back than that. In 2022, Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akla was effectively assassinated while covering an IDF raid on the Jenin refugee camp. To this day, no one has been held responsible for her death. Israel has also been targeting Al Jazeera journalists in Gaza as they've been covering the ongoing genocide. Two Al Jazeera journalists have been killed there since the start of the genocide, with more than 100 journalists being killed in total since October 7th. All of this comes just one day after World Press Freedom Day, which was marked on May 3rd. Al Jazeera, for its part, said that it will pursue every legal step in response to this action. And if you can find the video of Imran Khan signing off from occupied East Jerusalem, you should watch it. I always get a little choked up whenever I see anyone signing off for the last time, whether that's for a good reason like a retirement, but especially for a reason like this. Al Jazeera is a vital news organization, and they are one of the key reasons we even know what is happening in Gaza. This is clearly part of Israel's strategy to try and make sure that people around the world do not know what is going on in Gaza. It's not going to work, but it will take a lot of pressure from countries around the world on Israel to not only stop oppressing and murdering journalists, but of course, to stop the genocide entirely. And finally, 12 people have been killed in bomb attacks in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The two bombs went off in displacement camps in the eastern region of the country. The U.S. and the Congolese military have accused Rwanda and the M23 rebel group. Rwanda has vehemently denied the allegations. Rwanda has been accused of supporting M23's bid to control resource-rich areas of the DRC. The UN called the weekend's bomb attacks, quote, a flagrant violation of human rights and international humanitarian law and may constitute a war crime, unquote. A representative for Save the Children told Al Jazeera that the bombs went off close to the marketplace located at the camps and that it was mostly women and children who were injured. They also said that the final death toll was unclear. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders says it's suspending its operations in the area due to the rising security risk. Those are your headlines for Monday, May 6th. I'm Nora. You're listening to this podcast at sandynora.com on the Real News Network podcast feed and anywhere you get your podcasts. You know, last week I thought that I might have been talking too quickly on the Daily News podcast. No one complained, but I'm just going to put that out there. And if you've got an opinion on it, let me know. I'll talk to you tomorrow.